Okay, so Inter Buzzword 16 news of the week, and today
we're running.
Yeah, we are running. Today is October 15th, like 12 o'clock anyway, and yeah, so let's just jump in. Do we have any housekeeping things? I think we should just announce that next week is DoggerCon, as we talked about like the last 3 weeks or so, and we will provide a little special on Tuesday at least, maybe another one as well, but I think at least on Tuesday we will make a little special so that everyone knows what's going on in the space of DockerCon and what changed and what was announced.
Yeah, I will actually need to go through the agenda and prepare some questions. Hopefully I get my homework done. So
yeah, but I mean, you said that I should use my CQNEB Twitter account to tweet something so that you can maybe specifically get to those questions. Yeah. Maybe I try to do this. Let's see how this pans out. But anyways, I think with the announcements, we will have to talk, or we have a lot to talk about anyway. So I think you don't even need to make special questions.
There's anyways. No photo from you on the front row of the speakers. Why is that, Christian?
No, because I don't. I have no speaking gig this year around. Anyway, well, we will talk about DockerCon EU later in the show. I think that's all about housekeeping. Picks of the week. I think I renamed the news section with picks of the week. I'll do a marker here. So you had something. I mean, you talk about some particular thing.
Picks like picking from a plate. It's not like pictures. I was expecting now laughable pictures of cats and dogs or something out of the interwebs, and I thought that's an awkward category. But it's about picking something out of the news stream.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Ah. We actually don't talk in between podcasts, so we kind of invent the show while we are doing the show. I mean, that's totally cool.
Yeah. No. I think that's how you roll, right?
Yeah.
And there's a topic that you want to talk about, Clojure news.
Oh, yes. There was a conference again on Clojure, and Clojure this year has its 10th birthday. And there's a nice keynote from the inventor of Clojure, Rich Hickey. And he goes, I mean, for insiders in the Clojure community, there is nothing really, really, really new, but there are lots of details how everything came to be, what it is today. And but for those who are outside of the Clojure community, there's a lot of things you should keep in mind and ask yourself what your language provides you today and why this is your choice actually, and why would you keep that choice for the future. It's about immutability, it's about like how does data systems work, what do you need to solve problems in your language, and how much of that work is related to the language itself, because it gives you not the nicest abstractions, and how can a Lisp basically help you with all of these problems. And since we're at this, there's Guy Steele was also invited to that conference, and he gave a talk. Guy Steele was also responsible for work in Sun and has also worked with Lisp a long time. And he is more of a language theorist, I would say. And he presents some aggregated knowledge about the last 50 years of computer science, where he analyzed papers that was related to designing languages, designing compilers, and what are notations, because I didn't know that before. There is a notation apparently for designing a programming language and designing a compiler, and that totally looks not like a computer language at all. It's more like theoretics of mathematics, and it looks very complicated, but he has this nice, it's a 1 hour keynote, it's long, but he goes into every detail what language designers and practitioners have to solve, and basically which notation they come up with to express what they want to define, and how this actually helps you to reason about performance, concurrency, memory allocation, garbage collection, all of these things. It's a really theoretical talk, but it's nice to get a recap of computer science for those who don't want to dive into that. Sometimes you just take stuff for granted. And one side note is that the structure of C, and that relates basically then down to everything that comes afterwards. Basically, it's Java, C++, and then of course Golang and Rust and all modern languages that kind of still are in this imperative paradigm of programming. And it's very interesting to see where it all originated from, and then how less has changed. But there's maybe it's more like we didn't go to like invent new bodies or frameworks of everything, but we just changed the powder. Powder sugar on top of it.
It's the sugar coating. I think it's called sugar coating.
It's still C at the bottom.
Yeah, but I mean, it's still what it is. Isn't it a tautology? Isn't it clear? I mean, the fundamentals don't change, but just the abstractions and how it is abstracted changes.
Yeah, but it just due to the fact that it became so popular. Basically, what I was saying the last times when. How the Linux kernel is kind of said and done, and you said it, and why not just stick with it? It's one way of a paradigm. Out of these theorist thoughts, there are basically more solutions derivable. For instance, everything could be just in parentheses with Lisp. That's a solution to a problem. It's not the most popular currently, and might never will be, but... It's interesting to see where there's a point in history where something became very, very popular, and then we are like, because of all the assumptions that were made, these assumptions will never be touched again or revisited, and then we just go on. And that's basically last 30 years. It's kind of like, okay, let's improve a bit and not like do a revolution. It's just an interesting talk. And there are many more. And the other one is, deep learning needs closure. It's also another talk from that closure conference where Karin Maya, she is very popular in the community, basically makes the argument that Skynet wants to kill humans because Skynet itself is programmed in a object-oriented way, and that therefore Skynet tried to alter its own structures, but it couldn't because it was statically compiled and couldn't interchange its code with its new forms it would like to write code, and then it became to hate all humans for doing that. And it's a fun talk, but it also kind of shows the strengths of dynamic programming and homo iconicity language. And
Skynet discovers that it has a useless leg on the upper body, and then it says, stupid humans.
Shit, and now I have to keep it because if I cut it off, I will die.
You will bleed out.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's a fun talk.
Yeah, okay.
So these just, there's like, you go to YouTube and you search for Closure Conch 2017 and you will get there.
Yeah, we have it in the show notes as well. Cool. Because we are a good podcast.
Are we?
Are we? Are we? Are we? Okay, Closure.
Okay. And then you showed something to me, which I had to watch yesterday.
This is and then the next thing I would like to touch on just in the picks of the week section. Last week I spent a little time to create a little Vagrant setup with Docker Data Center. And I mean, Docker Data Center is, I mean, and this is now the commercial section. No, it's not. But you have like this UI where you can control all the engines in your system. You have a very fine granular role-based setup that you can set so that only one, the user here, can like only use this API call or so on. And the registry as well is within this Docker data center. And I didn't realize that it's encouraged to try it out and check it out. And it's pretty simple to try it out. And to make it even simpler, I create a little Vagrant setup so that you just do Vagrant up and then it will download the boxes and it starts DTR, so this registry and this UI, UCP is called. And I also throw in some stacks from my box, like Open LDAP and GoCD, and the ideas.
Oh, sorry, I have to go for a real break. Sorry, just keep on talking.
Yeah, and then you can... yeah, you can just try it out. You download it, and then it will spin up the boxes you need, and then you can log in. And there is a one-month trial, and you can just click get a license for a month, and then you can try it out. That's, yeah, that's pretty neat. But I don't want to elaborate too much on it. But I think it's worth trying out, because you have all this cool stuff just in a box. Yeah, check it out if you like. Links are in the show notes, or the link is in the show notes, so try it out. Okay, that's about the Docker data center thingy. And so now our main topic, if there is a main topic. I saw a conference talk from last year's DevOx Belgium, where I had never heard of it before, but anyways, it was a cool talk, or seems to be a cool conference. And there was one guy, Christopher Beatty. He gave a talk about the JVM and Docker, a good idea. And that was pretty cool. And the link is also in the show notes.
That comes across differently, because he asked in like good idea question mark. So there is a...
I mean, he questions it if it's whether it's a good idea or not.
Just to be explicit.
And sure. And I mean, the background of JVM, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it was created right to abstract the hardware underneath and make the deployment just a single Java binary or WAR file or whatever, and to be independent on what you're running on, whether it's Linux, x86.
That's certainly one goal, but I mean, there is a different, or I think there are two things that it solved, and because you can easily argue that if you have the compilers at hand, C runs also everywhere. I mean, C runs everywhere, and C++ does too. So the argument is basically you make a common runtime, actually, where you have control over the memory management. So there are two aspects to the JVM. Yeah, it's a virtual machine technology that runs on every host, but then there's also the ability to be a dynamic runtime where we can put in optimizations for code dynamically and also have control over the memory management, and then leave it to the programmer itself. So there are
not leave it to the operating system underneath. So you can and you can pre-allocate a heap, for instance, and you make sure that you have this memory available, and so you have this abstraction above the operating system.
Yeah, and
that
your scope
provides
you
with. You
can, to a certain degree, sketch your resource constraints already. That's what you mentioned, that you can give it kind of like, this is the memory. It's mostly memory related, really. And you can tweak the garbage collector. But for instance, what we come down to in that talk with the cores, it's a little bit of a different game. But.
And this is JVM ergonomics, right? That he talked about, that the JVM does a good job. I mean, not sure if it did it like from the beginning, but nowadays it's having a good job, self-configuring itself. You just run Java jar, and then it will pick the thread count according to the underlying core count, for instance, and it will. Yeah, make a couple of assumptions.
I would say, ergonomics, you can say that. It will from the get-go, if you don't say anything specific, it will try to do something that is less painful to you as a system engineer, which is arguably because sometimes you have program specifics that you can... I have people increase 100x speed-up by tweaking parameters to the JVM. So if you know what your code is doing, then there's certainly... So the average system configuration for the JVM is not actually high performant. It's more like, that's the base average. Everything should work now. kind of.
Yeah, good
and
enough.
It sizes itself to the hardware that it's running on. But that's exactly now a problem. What he described in his talk is basically when we use, and you need to go into more detail, so we have these, so we can share namespaces, but we can also constrain a container in terms of resource allocation.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. So yeah, maybe just back up or like go over it once more. Like containers are namespaces, right? The namespaces isolate the resource for the or the resources of different groups of processes. So you have a process one running in container one and process two running in container two. They cannot see each other because they have different PID namespaces. They cannot talk to each other because they have inter-process communication namespaces and network namespaces. So they are separated, but they are not constrained in how much resources they use. Everyone sees every resource and thinks, oh yeah, I can do whatever I like because I'm alone here. And this is where trouble is introduced if you are running multiple processes on the same host. And I mean, this was true or is true if you run multiple JVMs on the same host, right? Because then this JVM will see, oh yeah, I have 12 CPUs, and then let me take 12 CPUs and make 12 threads.
Yeah, totally. In that talk, there is nothing really very specific to running inside a container when, of course, the container tells you basically this is your frame that it isolates you. And then if you do non-cgrip aware calls, you get in your CPU or in your Java application in a container, you get 24 cores, for instance, if you have this hardware. But you actually, your cgrip constraints tell you, well, you only have two. And then there is a mismatch in information for the GVM. But
first, I mean, just sorry to interrupt again, but the power of containers is that everything is packaged, right? And he argues in his talk that this is not really a thing for Java because you have already this jar file, which is the package of everything you need, and you don't need nothing more if you have this jar. And I wonder if I agree with it. I think I slightly disagree because you have the configuration with which you can bundle with a container, and you have the JVM itself that you can bundle, so you can make sure that you have Java Enterprise 1. Whatever, and you have
the problem is a little bit that we kind of went down the wrong path. It's when the GVM was born, there was nothing like it. There was not a way you could bundle a certain target set, have it all your code, give it a configuration, manage dependencies inside it, make an Uber jar, and then just go to a virtual machine and let that code execute that you have bundled. And a GVM was kind of like the unit. It was the machine, like a computer or a host was the machine, the host. Now with containers, this has all changed a little bit, and now this fence.
But if we are not going down the cgrip route, should just say we package a JVM and we only run the JVM on one JVM in one container on one host, then we still have the advantage of having configuration management handled within the container and packaged with the container, and we have the correct JVM itself, like the correct GRE.
Yeah, but the container, idea, right? when starting with the GVM was basically very similar. It was kind of like, oh, you have these huge hosts, and then there are these tons of different script engines that will all do stuff. And then we have to have this part in C to be high performance, and then we do this part in X because we want to talk with our database high performance driver and blah blah blah. So there was need to consolidate what is out there and make it a little bit more one interface, one thing, one unit that you can pass around that is executable. It's very like the base idioms are really similar to the containerized world. It's just that...
Yeah, but you don't lose anything, right? If you don't... I mean, the JVM provides you with an execution runtime which is similar on all machines. So this abstract this a little bit. But the configuration, it doesn't extract, right? So it doesn't abstract, sorry. So if you only run... So before you had one virtual machine or one host, you run one JVM. If you put this JVM in a container without any constraints, then you don't lose anything. You just gain the configuration setup and the metrics from a container. So you don't lose anything. Or is it?
No, I don't think you lose anything. But also, I think, strictly speaking, if everything would be just JVMs, you don't gain anything. That's the other part. It doesn't, like, the part is more like why we containerize when we already have an abstraction for a Java virtual machine, and we have already a jar was also talked about as a container, like when you had these application servers like WebSpheres or JBosses, they were actually talking about their executable jar file as a container.
But you gain the reproducibility and the packaging, right? I mean,
yeah, packaging was also done in Java and everything. I'm a bit of a devil's advocate here. I'm totally for Docker.
Sure.
And the part is that not everybody wants to write and use the JVM. And then and these hosts are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Nobody can, like, one program usually can keep a big system busy, like 32 cores and 100 gigabytes of memory, but most of the time you're not doing it. Most of the time everybody is idle, and then you want to, like, increase utilization of your investment. Yeah. And therefore it's really, really handy. And that was something that the JVM couldn't give you because...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and this is now where we talk about C groups a bit. So, what you just said, that you want to consolidate your workload on single machine, but you want to constrain the workloads from each other so that they are not consuming all the resources, right? And that's where you say this container can get 500 megabytes of memory, and then the kernel will make sure if it exceeds the 500 megabyte of memory, then it will be killed. Or it swaps, or whatever the kernel thinks is appropriate. And this is what the guy talks about, Christopher talks about, that this is a problem.
Yeah, and
Also,
from his perspective, I can totally see that, because he introduces himself as a classical Java developer, and then he was kind of getting other tasks to do in his organization and became more of a DevOps side reliability engineer type of guy in his works. But, like, the big thing is, like, yeah, if you pass the JVM, you will get 2 gigabytes of memory, and then you set the C group constraint for that container to less than that. It's quite obvious that things turn out to be messy, because that's a logical thing. You cannot, like, on a higher abstraction level, you cannot constrain it, and then afterwards you expect more. That's just something that doesn't fit together, and maybe it's a gotcha. Maybe people are not aware of that. But
that's not all, right?
That you cannot, or that if you don't set, that's something that Elasticsearch also does. Elasticsearch relies on a call where it tries to see how many cores are we and how many threads do we have. But that if you run two processes on one host, there's always this problem that the JVM gives you kind of the wrong information here. And people know already that this is the case, and that you, on specific cases, you explicitly need to look into what have you configured for resource constraints of your Java application, and make that, like, make an appropriate fit on the host that it's running this application.
Yeah, but I mean, sure, yeah, you are right. So if you set it to less than what you give the JVM as a heap size, then that's obvious, right? But if you set it to the exact number, like 2 gigs of heap and 2 gigs of memory for the container, then you come into this subtle thing that you do not only have the heap that is used from the JVM as memory, right?
Yeah.
You have threads, you have metaspace, which I don't know what metaspace is, you code, I don't know either. Garbage collection, I know. I mean, if you want to read through the memory, then you have to kind of read the memory on top of the memory that you have, so... even if you have the same size of heap, if the garbage collector comes along, then he has to read into memory, and then it exceeds the heap size, right? So you have this multiple memory parts that you have to take into account. So
yeah,
if you have the same.
So I think the meta space is exactly for the code itself and the class generation capabilities. But this is also not new. This is like I'm talking about like the author. It's kind of like, yeah, you forget this all the time because you're writing Java code and most of the time you are fine and you never had to worry about it. Now you go into this capacity kind of setup where you want to plan what can fit on a host. And now you start asking these questions, and it's quite obvious. Yeah, the heap is just the heap. Then there is a stack, then there's the meta space. Then there is this garbage collection that also needs, first of all, threads, and then, of course, memory to free space. First, like, make a map of what is removable and that costs memory, of course. But this is what you would have done anyways when you're profiling your Java application. You would actually go and tweak for it, and you see what is what and what needs what, and you do all these analytics to give you a good question. I think that there's... It's like, oh, everything is now getting to shit because we're running it in a container. That's not... You should have done this in the first place.
Yeah, but it's... I mean, sure, if you have a 2 gigabyte virtual machine and you set the heap space to, or heap size to 2, then you will get the same issues, right? You run into the same thing. But what the JVM can do on a virtual machine is it can check the proc file system for what is really on the system, and then it gets the real information, right? It gets the real information of the virtual machine. Whereas with containers, the proc file system is not namespaced, so the system will tell, okay, I have 64 gigabytes, but the container only has 2 gigabytes, and this is the JVM doesn't know about what the container has. So because the JVM is not aware of cgroups, as most of the tools are not aware of cgroups. So maybe this will come, but for now it's not. So then the JVM can just crash on a virtual machine and say, look, you set heap space to 2 gigabytes and we only have 2 gigabytes, so this won't work. So it might just crash from the start and says, yeah, that's bogus. For containers, it won't, because it sees 64 gigs, even though it has constraints, it doesn't know about those constraints, right? But it's interesting.
I think that's fine. I think it's just that we would kind of expect it. Maybe your reflexes as an engineer are not like, oh shit, that should have happened, and then you kind of surprised that it actually happens. But it's going back to the not everything runs and not everything is abstracted away. There is, of course, there is a ticking clock on a cycle, and you have threads and you have memory and you need to get along with your resources, which was maybe is not so common as a day-to-day work exercise, but it's totally there. So I'm not surprised about this talk, actually. I'm kind of like stunned about the fact that people are now complaining about it. It's more like, we got all these lunch for free and now somebody makes us aware of like, ooh, gasoline and diesel will pollute the air. Who knows? Smoking is dangerous. Who has known that? Like, reality. Yeah, fuck reality. I hate reality. Yeah. Kill reality.
But I mean, it comes in like subtle and not that obvious ways, right? If you have 2 gigabytes of heap allocated and the container only has 2 gigabytes of heap, then the kernel will start swapping out pages, and then your virtual machine, even though there's plenty of memory on the system, the process is so slowed down because it's paging in and swapping out and so on. So it's slowed down, and then you look at this process and you think, yeah, why is it so slow?
And then
you have to look into memory management, basically, and then you have to check out what's going on.
And I like the talk in the regards that he kind of explains his path to debugging it, to find out all the relevant informations. Yeah. That's all really, really good. So the talk is totally nice, and it's totally giving you what you need to know to do this.
Yeah.
But for instance, many, many years ago, when I was a kid, we were trying to ship also a GVM-based search system with some Python client code. And the GVM for the Java part was basically taking 24 hours to launch the GVM, and it would take and then every request was like minutes, and we were having a Sun machine with literally 64 threads, 500 gigabytes of memory, and like an insanely huge box. In the end, it turned out that the system administrator hated Java so much that he made some configuration on the Sun host that said, every time when a GVM is hosted, use that network attached file system, and then constrain it to hell. So basically, we were not aware of that where we are running, but in fact, we were on some hard drive somewhere else in the data center, not even on that host. And then we were resource limited, and so paging became a network thingy. And just because he said all the time, like the administrator was, yeah, we could, yeah, that's what my policy. That's what I do when I see Java applications. I hate them. And we were going, yeah, what? Yeah, but you see. And then he eventually got fired afterwards. But it's like yeah, you have, yeah. The example is, you come and see your green field, and then you see, oh shit, nothing works as expected, and then you dig deeper, and then you see, ah, crap, there are all these nitty little greet details that you need to be aware of. And yeah, abstraction hides these details from you for a good reason, but then you should never forget that they are actually in play. You need to care about them.
And there we go. There's a fallacy of abstraction, right? When the abstraction goes wrong, then you need to know about the abstractions. So you cannot just
Yeah, it's very rare that you find really good abstractions in the world.
Yeah, but even if you will have edge cases where this abstraction will break, and if you then you don't have no one with knowledge about the abstraction itself, then you are fucked.
Kind of, or you start a long research task.
Yeah, very long, and then you try to extend it until you retire, and then everything is fine.
As long as you get paid, that's a deal. If you like that kind of work.
Yeah.
Okay, but no, cool. Nice talk. Yeah. And
nice talk, and even though it's from 2016, so it's more than, it's 1 year old, God, but still alive and kicking. It's centuries ago. Yeah. His comments about what you can do with the Docker engine are wrong, and but that's like 2016. You had this shares thingy, you could set it to, this container should use CPU 1, 0, and 5, but obviously that's not a good thing, because if you have only two CPUs, then this won't start, so you can use shares, but shares also not good, because shares are only relative to each other, so you don't know what other containers are running. And but nowadays you can say CPUs, not CPU set, and CPUs, you can say I want 0.5 CPUs, and then you will get a half a CPU, or you say one, and then you will get one CPU, so all the amount of shares or ticks you will get will be one
but
CPU.
Maybe that's up for a later talk, actually, but I want to be, there is this Martin Thompson, a guy who's really into performance optimization, and he talks a great deal about thread congestion. So if I think of something that is a Java thingy, or even Golang, we can also use Golang with green threads. If you give something like a half of a CPU, is there not kind of like, for instance, your program uses 10 Go routines, or you have a thread pool with 10. All these skipping, waiting, and locking, and coordinating of that, like when are you actually executing, and when are you sleeping, and when are you executing again? If you put this on half a CPU, are you not asking for trouble? Why would?
Yeah, no.
Or two and a half. It doesn't really matter. It's like you have this magnitude more of threads waiting on being executed, and then you funnel this down to a certain tenth of actual running. Are you not completely overwhelming your caches and make everything slow because you need to go back to memory to fetch the state of that certain thread and then
Yeah, it's even more or harder. And this, we should put this one as well in a backlog. But just to, like, if you say I want half a CPU, you don't specifically say which CPU you want, right? And if you have a green thread, then this green thread will obviously use the caches and the memory that is associated with this particular core it's currently running on. And if the green thread, then if your container is moved to a different CPU, then you cannot use the green thread's CPUs, the memory anymore. Yeah, so you have to, that's like totally, it's totally, totally slow. This is why Go channels are cool, but if you have to cross cores, or if which have not the same memory system, then you are screwed. And this is why you want to do pinning. So if you want to, if you are aware of that is the case, then you want to pin a container or a process directly to a certain CPU so that it's not moving away from the CPU anymore. But this, this is totally something we should put in the backlog. And then I think I have some semi-knowledge about this, but maybe we can dig someone up who has like good, solid knowledge about this.
I know a Canadian immigrant who probably does.
Yeah, I know someone else, but
No, I'm not.
A Canadian? No. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean, you can ask him. I have someone, and I will call him Hans, because I asked him if he wants to do a podcast, and he said, yeah, no. But I will come in for you, Hans, if you listen to this podcast, and we should bring you...
People are actually afraid that they look bad when they come onto our
podcast.
Yeah,
but it's a podcast. There's no video. But yeah, I know what you. Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's kind of like these total douchebags ask me questions I don't know, and then come up with half-baked knowledge, and they feel comfortable with it. So certain people will never be on this show.
But this is a shame. But anyway, I mean, we ask ourselves stupid questions and we don't know any answer, we don't know only some answers, so that's totally fine for us at least.
We are asking for being called out on wrong things so we can learn.
Exactly, exactly. So just irritating people and make them outraged so that they counter our arguments.
Yeah. C++ is just a slower Java.
Okay, so last point, I think, it's the DockerCon. Just to, I'm excited, and it's going to be awesome. And just one fun point that I committed to like last week somehow, is being a Docker pal, which is a cool thing. So if you are a veteran for Docker, I mean, either you visited a couple of DockerCons or you are a Docker employee, which I am. then you can mentor a couple of guys who are new to it. And I have like four guys, one from Jakarta. So, and I know Indonesia because I went there for 3 months back then.
Jakarta is and nice another because guy, next to it is the island called Java.
Yeah, it's Java. It's Jakarta is on Java, by the way.
That's a city. So I thought it was an island nearby.
No, Jakarta is a city on the shore of Java. Okay. And one guy from Belgium who's a little bit older, like 50-something, and he's new, and that's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward. So I can be the guy talking cool stuff or bullshit sometimes, but making them comfortable and joking around. I think that's going to be awesome. And I also committed to host the community track on Tuesday, which is also going to be fun because so I just have to introduce a guy, so I think that should be pretty easy. And there are cool talks that I'm hosting, like looking under the hood of Containerd, which I wanted to do anyway, so this is something that I'm really thrilled to go deeper into Containerd. And what else is cool? Android meets Docker. That's also something that I think is going to be interesting. I think what he's doing is developing Android apps in a container, or like testing them there, and so make them work and run on normal machines, so that he can have a Jenkins that spawns a couple of containers where the Android operating system is in, or the simulator, and then he can just use Docker Swarm and the CI/CD pipeline to test his Android. That's going to be fun. From zero to serverless in 60 seconds. That's also pretty cool. That's the guy. How is he called? Alice? No. He's pretty. Where is it? But it's a guy who does a FaaS on Kubernetes, and I think we talked about it. Or I showed you that's like he has a framework where you can deploy a function as a service in Kubernetes pretty easily, and that's going to be awesome to talk to him as well. Yeah, and a simple, small, secure Alpine Linux under the hood. That's also something that I want to look into as well. So yeah, that's going to be fun.
So these will be all on that. So this is the community track where external Docker people would give their talks.
Is that? Yeah, there are multiple breakout sessions, I think they are called. And one of which is the community theater. And then there is Black Belt. And then there is some
Black
other
Belt,
things.
That sounds dangerous.
Yeah, that's dangerous. That is actually dangerous. So... using Docker, best practices, using use cases, Black Belt, new is Edge. So shows how containers are redefining our technology toolbox, Transform, and ecosystem, community theater, yeah. And I'm afraid I will just, I think it will blow my mind because there are so many cool things that I want to look at, and I won't be able to attend any, all of them. So that's, but yeah, that's how it is, right?
No, I mean, but if we have a good overview on Tuesday, what to focus on, and we get kind of like opinionated pointers, I think that's valuable to anybody.
Yeah, I will try to gather my colleagues and then ask them what is the thing, make a little survey before we have our little podcast, so that I have... let's say 20 people what they think is the most exciting thing, and or the top three or something, and then I can assemble a list of things to attend.
I think that's I mean, there are people totally more into like the daemon stuff and the underlying, like the basics, and then there are people who are more interested in how do I do software as a service, function as a service, cloud installations. And I guess all of these aspects are kind of there, and then you just have the best ones
and maybe I can grab someone for maybe, I don't know, maybe Wednesday morning or so. We will chat offline if we can have a little squeeze half an hour podcast, so that I grab maybe one of my pals, so the guys that I'm mentoring, and ask them how they see or what is the experience like for the first day of DockerCon, and what do they think. So maybe some feedback from people who are new to all of this. Maybe. We can talk offline if we think that's a good idea. Anyway, that's going to be fun. Networking everywhere as well. I mean, there are drinks, I heard, publicly and privately.
You know, there is this one area in Copenhagen where you are allowed to buy stuff like Thymian. And and it's I went there 2 years ago, and it's good. It's good. Absolutely recommend it. It's called Christiania. It's behind the main train station.
Okay, maybe
absolutely
I won't have...
safe to go there. And just for people who think alcohol is a poison.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah, I would put it on a list, but maybe I won't go there. And then, we will talk about the announcements. And for those in Berlin, I will have a little DockerCon EU recap at the Docker meetup here in Berlin. On Thursday evening at 7 or so. You have to maybe look at the Docker Berlin meetup group. Yeah, that's going to be cool. And I'm very excited. It's going to be awesome.
Cool. I hope so. I'm now a little bit stuck with more news, but I'm not getting out so much than Christian does now. So, yeah.
Yeah, but that's why we talk.
Yay. Yeah, I get to watch a whole bunch of conferences offline in my couch. So it's also comfortable. Yeah. I'm an old person, so I like to be comfortable and not going into
planes. You're 1 year older than me.
Am I?
Yeah, I mean, you already had your birthday this year. I'm I'm not so... On paper, you are 1 year older.
Okay.
In a couple of weeks it will change, but anyway.
Cool. Great. Yeah. Then we go back and enjoy the sunny Sunday in Berlin. And
This we will do. And I will put this. I will do it this evening. I will put it online, and then we can send out tweets.
Cool. goodbye, listeners. It would be actually all cool right to get a ping back if we have more than two listeners by now. But I'm curious to know.
I looked at the statistics, or I assembled a couple of statistics, like grokked to the logs of the web server where the MP3s are. And we dropped, like, our long pause, we dropped from like X to X, 50% of X. So we lost, it seems we lost a lot of listeners by having such a long pause. That's why we're committing to, like, make this a very stable podcast now.
Yeah, maybe, right? Maybe I Twitter this again and then maybe we get some back.
Yeah.
Or maybe not.
Or maybe not. But then they are not real fans if they won't come back. Then. Okay, cool. So talk to you in 2 days. And yep. Have a nice sunny Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.